Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It was an Apache firing with a really loud noise. The F-16s fired, the Cobra, the drone, all kinds of aircraft. Terror, terror, so much terror. They wiped out mosques, people, and displaced people. They kept saying, go to Rafah, go to Rafah. And people came here, and then you target them?
Palestinian health officials say Israeli strikes on Rafah in southern Gaza have killed at least 67 people overnight. As concern grows, Israel will soon launch a ground invasion. Over a million displaced Palestinians have sought refuge in Rafah. We'll speak with a teacher trying to evacuate Rafah with her young children.
The situation is very hard. I want people to know we are human, like them. Our children, yani, they deserve life. You must fire. If they cannot cease fire, just leave us to get out from Gaza, to be survived.
We'll also speak with Palestinian human rights attorney Noura Erekat as the U.S., the European Union, the United Nations, and countries around the world warn Israel against a full ground invasion of Rafah. Then, the Poor People's Campaign plans to march on 30 state legislatures to catalyze the voting power of poor and low-wage workers ahead of November's election.
Children are protected. Sick folk are healed. Low wage workers are paid. Immigrants are treated fairly. Affordable houses are provided. Until saving the world and diplomacy and living in peace is more important than blowing up the world. We won't be silent anymore.
We'll speak with Bishop William Barber and economist Michael Zweig, author of Class, Race, and Gender, Challenging the Injuries and Divisions of Capitalism. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. It's wonderful to be back. Palestinian health officials say Israeli strikes killed at least 67 people in Rafah overnight. As fears grow, Israel will soon launch a ground invasion of a city where over 1 million Palestinians have sought refuge. The overnight airstrikes came as Israeli special forces raided a home in Rafah in an operation to free two Israeli Argentine hostages, 60-year-old Fernando Simon Merman and 70-year-old Luis Har. They were both found to be in good condition after being held captive since October 7th. On Sunday, President Biden spoke by phone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu. The White House said Biden warned Netanyahu against a ground invasion of Rafah unless there's a, quote, credible and executable plan for ensuring the safety and support for the more than 1 million people sheltering there, unquote. Authorities in Egypt have threatened to suspend a key peace treaty with Israel if Rafah is invaded. Hamas has also warned an Israeli invasion of Rafah will torpedo ongoing truce talks. The European Union also warned against a ground invasion of Rafah, with one top EU official saying it could lead to a, quote, unspeakable humanitarian catastrophe, unquote. Israel carried out numerous airstrikes on Rafah over the weekend, including one that leveled a five-story home, killing at least eight people.
I am searching for my niece. She was 2 months old. My sister and her husband are sleeping in their room, and my mother and my other sister with her children in the living room. Me and my father in the room over here. Suddenly, a rocket fell on us. My sister, her husband, and their children, including my niece, who is 2 months old, all gone.
This all comes as Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces increasing pressure at home to secure the release of the remaining hostages in Gaza. Earlier today, a relative of the two Israeli Argentine hostages freed in Rafah called for Israel to reach a deal now.
And we know about the discussions in Cairo or in Paris and others between the Hamas, between Israeli, with the mediators. Please be serious and strike a deal. The Israeli people needs the deal done. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, today. We want it done as soon as possible in order for to give us some breathe. We must breathe a little bit here.
Hind Rajab, the six-year-old Gazan girl who'd been missing for nearly 2 weeks, was found dead on Saturday. Relatives found Hind's body inside a car alongside the dead bodies of five of her family members. The bodies of two rescue workers who were attempting to reach Hind were also discovered. Audio of Hind's harrowing call with emergency dispatchers was heard around the world as the terrified girl begged for someone to come get her as an Israeli tank approached her. The car where Hind was found was covered in bullet holes. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said Israeli forces also targeted its ambulance as it arrived on the scene. Emergency workers Yusuf Zeno and Ahmed Al-Madun had found their way to Hind, but appear to have been killed by Israeli fire just yards from her vehicle. This is Hind's mother, Wissam Hamada, after she learned of her daughter's killing.
My heart is completely destroyed over my daughter. 2 weeks, they killed them. 2 weeks, they were in that car. I've told the world from day one, please go get Hind. God is the only one sufficient for us. Everyone failed us. I will tell God on the day of judgment about my daughter. I swear I will never forgive you or any human involved or any human rights organization.
A court in the Netherlands has ordered the Dutch government to stop exporting U.S.-made F-35 fighter jet parts to Israel. In the ruling, one of the judges wrote, quote, "It is undeniable that there's a clear risk that the exported F-35 parts are used in serious violations of international humanitarian law," unquote. In November, Oxfam and Amnesty International sued the Dutch government, saying the arms transfers violated the Netherlands' obligations under international law to prevent war crimes. One of President Biden's top foreign policy aides has admitted the administration has made missteps in the Middle East. During a closed-door meeting with Arab American leaders in Michigan, Deputy National Security Advisor Jonathan Finer was recorded saying, quote, "We are very well aware that we have missteps in the course of responding to this crisis since October 7th, unquote. During the conversation, Finer also said, quote, "I do not have any confidence in this current government of Israel," unquote. Finer traveled to Michigan after Arab American leaders vowed to vote uncommitted in this month's Michigan primary due to Biden's support for Israel's assault on Gaza. Here in New York, hundreds of Palestinian rights activists occupied the Museum of Modern Art Saturday, forcing the museum to close to the public. Protesters unfurled massive banners and handed out mock MoMA pamphlets in which they called out museum trustees for their investments in Israeli weaponry and other industries. Another protest was organized outside the Brooklyn Museum. The actions came as an open letter signed by over 100 artists and other cultural workers condemned the, quote, "disgraceful silence of our institutions as Israel commits genocide in Gaza," unquote. In Providence, Rhode Island, Brown University students ended an eight-day-long hunger strike demanding Brown divest from companies supplying Israel with military equipment. The students say they'll continue fighting for divestment and for Palestinian rights. In November, a Palestinian-American student at Brown, Hisham Ortani, was left paralyzed after being shot along with two friends in Burlington, Vermont, while they visited over the Thanksgiving holiday. Talks have resumed in Iraq that could result in the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq more than 20 years after the 2003 U.S. invasion. The United States currently has about 2,500 soldiers in Iraq and another 900 troops in Syria. Calls for the troops to withdraw have increased after the U.S. carried out a number of deadly drone attacks on militia groups in Baghdad. In other military news, U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin has been hospitalized again This time, he's being treated in a critical care unit for a bladder issue. On Sunday, he temporarily transferred power to his deputy. Austin was diagnosed with prostate cancer in December. Former President Donald Trump is facing widespread criticism after saying he would encourage Russia to attack NATO allies who pay too little money into the military alliance. Trump made the comment during a campaign rally in South Carolina.
One of the presidents of a big country stood up and said, "Well, sir, if we don't pay and we're attacked by Russia, will you protect us?" I said, "You didn't pay? You're delinquent?" He said, "Yes, let's say that happened. No, I would not protect you. In fact, I would encourage them to do whatever the hell they want. You got to pay. You got to pay your bills." And the money came flowing in.
NATO Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg issued a statement in response to Trump's remarks, quote, "Any suggestion that allies will not defend each other undermines all of our security, including that of the U.S., and puts American and European soldiers at increased risk," he said. Finland held national elections Saturday. The conservative former prime minister, Alexander Stubb, won the presidential election with over 51% of the vote. It was Finland's first election since joining NATO. In Pakistan, candidates affiliated with the jailed former Prime Minister Imran Khan have pulled off a major upset by winning 101 seats, more than any other party in last week's election, even though Khan's PTI party was formally barred from running. But the PTI-affiliated candidates fell short of winning a majority of seats, giving other parties a chance to form a coalition government. Supporters of Khan accused the military of rigging Thursday's vote by taking drastic actions, including shutting down the country's cell phone service on election day.
"Today's demonstration is a protest against the forces that have stolen the people's mandate. This is a protest against those forces that do not accept public opinion and think they can impose their decision on the public."
In Sudan, UN officials estimate about 18 million people are facing emergency levels of hunger, a figure that's doubled since last year due to months of fighting between the Sudanese army and the paramilitary rapid support forces. The humanitarian crisis has also triggered the world's largest displacement of children ever seen in Sudan, with over 700,000 likely to suffer severe acute malnutrition, according to UNICEF. This is the agency's spokesperson, James Elder.
"First, the world's largest displacement of children has been seen in Sudan. 4 million children have been displaced. That's just over 13,000 children displaced every single day for the past 300 days. Safety gone, worldly possessions gone, hope fading. Second, the consequences of the past 300 days mean that more than 700,000 children are likely to suffer the most dangerous form of malnutrition this year. UNICEF won't be able to treat more than 300,000 of those without improved access and without additional support. In that case, tens of thousands would likely die."
Burma's ruling military junta has imposed mandatory military service for all young men and women. Under the new law, all men age 18 to 35 and women age 18 to 27 will be ordered to serve for 2 years, though that can be extended to 5 years in the event of an ongoing state of emergency. This month marks 3 years since the military seized power in a 2021 coup and ousted elected leader Aung San Suu Kyi and other members of her party. Earlier this month, Burma's UN ambassador appealed to the international community to do more to help his country.
"Last 3 years, over 44,000 people have been brutally killed by the military. More than 2.6 million people have been internally displaced. Over 86,000 civilian properties, including religious buildings, have been destroyed or abandoned by the junta forces. Almost 19 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. Half of the population has been thrown into poverty."
Meanwhile, Amnesty International is calling for a war crimes probe over the military bombing of a church in the Burmese city of Sagaing in January, which killed 17 people, including 2 children who were attending a Sunday service. Amnesty is urging the UN Security Council to refer the Burmese junta to the International Criminal Court. In news from Somalia, the militant group al-Shabaab has claimed responsibility for an attack on a military base in Mogadishu that killed 4 Emirati troops and a Bahraini military officer. The foreign troops were at the base to train Somali soldiers in their fight against al-Shabaab. A jury in Washington, D.C., has awarded $1 million to the climate scientist Michael Mann, who'd sued two right-wing critics for defamation. In a statement, Mann said, quote, I hope this verdict sends a message that falsely attacking climate scientists is not protected speech, unquote. And the city of Minneapolis has agreed to pay $950,000 to a group of journalists who were attacked by Minneapolis police while they covered protests over the police killing of George Floyd. In its lawsuit, the American Civil Liberties Union of Minnesota had accused police of tear gassing and pepper spraying journalists, as well as shooting some journalists in the face with hard foam bullets. The ACLU said several journalists were arrested and threatened at gunpoint. And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Palestinian health officials say overnight Israeli strikes on Rafah in southern Gaza have killed at least 67 people as concern grows Israel will soon launch a full-scale ground invasion. Over 1 million displaced Palestinians have sought refuge in Rafah, which borders Egypt, after Israel claimed it was a safe zone. Palestinians in Rafah say a mosque and several houses were hit by the overnight Israeli strikes.
It was an Apache firing with a really loud noise. The F-16s fired, the Cobra, the drone, all kinds of aircraft. Terror, terror, so much terror. They wiped out mosques, people, and displaced people. They kept saying, go to Rafah, go to Rafah. And people came here. And then you target them?
Over the weekend, Israel carried out numerous airstrikes in Rafah, including one that leveled a five-story home, killing at least eight people.
My sister and her husband are sleeping in their room, and my mother and my other sister with her children in the living room. Me and my father in the room over here. Suddenly, a rocket fell on us. My sister, her husband, and their children, including my niece, who is 2 months old, all gone.
The overnight airstrikes came as Israeli forces carried out an Operation Rafah to free two Israeli Argentine hostages who were found to be in good condition. Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu faces increasing pressure at home to secure the release of the remaining hostages in Gaza. Earlier today, a relative of the two men freed in Rafah called for Israel to reach a deal now.
And we know about the discussions in Cairo or in Paris and others between the Hamas, between Israeli, with the mediators. Please be serious and strike a deal. The Israeli people needs the deal done. Not yesterday, not tomorrow, today. We want it done as soon as possible in order for to give us some breathe. We must breathe a little bit here.
On Sunday, President Biden spoke by phone with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, warning against Israel launching a ground invasion of Rafah. Aid agencies fear the offensive would cause massive casualties, while UNICEF has warned an escalation of Israel's attacks in Rafah will cause hunger and disease to skyrocket. Hamas cautioned an Israeli invasion of Rafah will torpedo ongoing negotiations for a truce. Authorities in Egypt have also threatened to suspend a key peace treaty with Israel if Rafah is invaded. For more, we're going directly to Rafah to speak with Duha Latif. She's a 29-year-old teacher from Gaza trying to evacuate Rafah with her young children, 6-year-old Amir and 1.5-year-old Karim. Duha, welcome to Democracy Now!, especially under these difficult circumstances. We appreciate you being with us. You are a native of Rafah. Can you describe the situation there now?
Hello, Amy. Thanks for hosting. I'm sure most of you saw the news yesterday and what happened in Rafah. It was the worst night in my life, and I really cannot believe that I am still alive. And actually, situation here is very terrible. Rafah is a small city, and now 1.5 million people in Rafah, and Rafah is just 55 square kilometers, which means that per square kilometers in Rafah, they are around 24,000 Palestinians. Just imagine imagine this, Amy. Therefore, it's very difficult to get food, water, or medicine, in addition to the spread of diseases because of large population. Also, Rafah is a city with no hospital, no electricity, no bakeries since 4 months. This is the situation here.
You are 29 years old. You're a teacher, Dua, in Rafah?
Right, yes, that's right.
The city has swelled to four times the population. Can you talk about your attempts to get out with your two little ones, your one-and-a-half-year-old and your six-year-old?
The issue of leaving Rafah and evacuation to Egypt is very complicated, and it's very, very expensive because we need the approval of the Egyptian side to grant us exit arrangements, which cost a large amount of money, and this is what we don't have at the present time, and this is what GoFundMe created a GoFundMe account, because we don't have money to get out from Gaza.
What do you mean? How much money does it cost to leave Gaza? What are you raising money for?
In fact, I can't determine that exactly, but I can tell you that the amount required to be paid to exit Gaza is considered somewhat high, very high, especially in our current case. This amount includes the travel costs and expensive coordination, in addition to what is required when we arrive in Egypt side. Of course, if we're still alive, such as renting a place to stay and buy clothes and food and children needs. Actually, we don't know to whom this money goes, and I cannot mention specific side, but what I know is that we have to pay this amount for one of Egyptian offices.
Can you talk about your little ones and how they are processing what's happening right now? Do you hear bombing, shelling around you?
Yes. Last night, maybe you see this in the news. It was terrible, and we are that my children was scared all the night, and they crying, and maybe you see what happened in the news, and what happened really is very, very hard and difficult.
I'm wondering if you heard the relative of the two Israeli-Argentine hostages who the Israeli military freed in Rafah. Their relative said, please have a truce now. It is not enough that you have freed our two loved ones.
Yes, no, I don't hear this. And I am like you. I hear this just from the news.
So if you can talk about, at this point, what message you have for President Biden. You may have heard that his aides are saying that he's made mistakes in dealing with the Middle East. What message do you have for President Biden?
I will send a message. I have two children, and they are always nervous and afraid from the voices they hear around us, and always ask me question. I don't have the answer, for it. Mom, when can we get out? Mom, when we will eat burger? Mom, when we can go back to school? And it's difficult to call children while the mother needs somebody to call her. So my message to President Biden, we are innocent civilians, and we have no fault in what is happening. Our children deserve to live a normal life like the rest of world's children. Just one word, President Biden, cease fire now. You have the power to make it happen right now.
And Dua, do you have access to clean water? Also, have you taken in refugees from other parts of Gaza at this point into your own home?
And actually, Amy, yes, I have, but there is only canned food, beans and tuna. For 4 months, my children are in a growing stage and need healthy and useful food like egg, milk, fruits, and all of this doesn't exist at the present time. There is no clean water because of this, my young son, Kareem, 1.5 years, suffered from intestinal catarrh, and also there is no medicine for this. Also about the refugee, our situation, like the situation of 1,000 people here in Rafah. Yes, I have many refugees in my home. They are my relatives from Gaza and northern Gaza. Every home in Rafah is full of refugees.
Well, I thank you so much for taking this time speaking to us from Rafah.
Amy, I want just to say a word, can I?
Yes.
We are urgently trying to leave Rafah, but we need money to leave. We have a GoFundMe account. If people want to support us by donating or sharing or help my family, we need to leave to keep my family safe.
Well, Dua Latif, I thank you so much for being with us. 29-year-old teacher from Rafah trying to evacuate there with her young children, her 6-year-old Amir and her 1.5-year-old Karim. When we come back, we'll speak with Palestinian human rights attorney Noura Erekat as the U.S., the European Union, countries around the world warn Israel against a ground invasion of Rafah. Stay with us. من الآتي في الدور غدا لا أحد يعلم من الآتي في الدور غدا سماء المخيم عابسة أحلامه مكتوبة على كل جدار Yalam, No One Knows by Amal Mirkus. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. In the United States, the European Union, countries around the world are warning Israel against a ground invasion of Rafah in southern Gaza, where over 1 million Palestinians have sought refuge from the rest of Gaza. One top EU official said it could lead to a, quote, unspeakable humanitarian catastrophe. Authorities in Egypt have threatened to suspend a key peace treaty with Israel if Rafah is invaded. Hamas has also warned an Israeli invasion of Rafah will torpedo ongoing truce talks. For more, we're joined by Palestinian human rights attorney Noura Erekat and an associate professor at Rutgers University, author of the book Justice for Some, Law and the Question of Palestine. Welcome back to Democracy Now!, Noura. If you can start off by responding to this threat over the weekend, that plans are being readied to invade, for Israel to invade Rafah, and the world, countries around the world, warning Israel not to do this. Apparently, President Biden doing that in a phone call with Netanyahu as well. Your response and what this would mean.
Good morning, Amy. It might be a bit refreshing to hear these warnings sound off from across the world in various capitals, but they are completely and wholly inadequate, given that we know that this is a plausible genocide, given that we know what Israel has said, despite multiple warnings. It created a ground invasion on October 27th. It has destroyed all of the hospitals. It has blown up all of the universities. It has created a situation of starvation, of a lack of even water. There is a humanitarian crisis that even without another bomb falling will lead to sure death of thousands of Palestinians. These capitals, these states, have an arsenal of diplomatic options available to them to stop a genocide, first and foremost as a UN Security Council resolution demanding an immediate ceasefire. Short of that is the cutting of weapons transfers, as has the Netherlands High Court demanded this morning of stopping the transfer of F-35 jet parts to Israel. Belgium has stopped weapons transfers. Japan has cut military contracts. Short of that, these states can cut diplomatic ties. What is it? What is it to the population of Rafah now basically bracing themselves for more massacre, for warnings to a state that is responsible under international law and accountable? And if it is not responsible or accountable,